Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Plank of the Week, and I can tell you, they come around very fast because there is so much plankery out there. There's been football, there's been politics, there's been international issues, there's been all sorts of things going on, and I'm delighted to say that today we welcome back Mr. Russell Quirk for the first time, I think, Russell, since you provided us with these rather splendid Plank of the Week mugs.
Indeed, glad to see you've actually got some left.
Well, Chuck's been trying to sell them all off out the back end of the building, but luckily we've managed to save three. Emma Webb is here as well. Thank you very much for joining us, as ever. I would like to also introduce the new Plank of the Week, which I'm happy to say has been supplied to us by a keen viewer called Charles Head, who sent me this and said it's a plank made out of real wood. He's got two sides to it. It's been varnished. He's even got it in the correct font for the show. And he says that it could be placed on the interview desk as a trophy to be awarded to the Plank of the Week. And it's a vintage brass stand. I mean, he's really gone to town, this guy. Charles, it's brilliant. And he says,
impressive.
Please keep creating great content. We need you guys at Talk Radio. So thank you, Charles, very much indeed. Very much appreciated. And it will have pride of place in front of me for the rest of the show. So, Emma, why don't we kick off with your first Plank of the Week?
It's a charity called Population Matters.
Oh, yes.
Who have given an award to Harry and Meghan for their environmental decision to not have more than two children.
Isn't that great?
And they've awarded them the equivalent in dollars of £500 to give to a charity.
That won't go far in their house.
But the reason why this is plankish is because I'm not sure, given the fact that Meghan is 39, that their decision is an entirely environmental one.
Well, I think you're probably right, because as we probably would have thought, they're not going to have any more children. But, you know, as people say, accidents do happen. She's also, by the way, now representing some ionisation company. I don't know if you've ever heard of ionised water. I actually bought a bottle of it the other day because they didn't have any other water. It was the only kind they had. It didn't taste any different to me from other water. I didn't feel particularly energised.
What are they paying her for that?
Well, what I can't, I don't know how much they're paying her, but she had there was a tweet that went out by the company, it's a Californian company, and the cheapest ionising machine that they sell is $3,500. So I'm not buying one of those anytime soon. But I imagine that 500 quid to her will literally be change in the purse.
What is the charity going to do if she and Harry do have another child? I mean, that's going to be hilarious.
Presumably they're going to have to go and take the award away.
They're going to have to
take
it back.
Yeah.
And do they now give everybody that's only got two children the same award?
Also, what about people who haven't had any children? Right? What do they get? 1,000?
Well, why are they giving it to Harry and Meghan? It's just because they're Harry and Meghan. So what? They're two prominent people who have decided not to have... I'm one of those people who thinks that children happen to be a blessing and that you shouldn't ever deprive yourself of blessings.
I mean, we wouldn't want to get too personal about this, but I mean, what would happen if she did become pregnant again? I mean, she'd obviously have to take account of her age, but you wouldn't go, well, because we've got this award for having two, we'd better not have a third. You wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, it kind of smacks of it being a bit China-esque, don't you? You
know, well, also, presumably the charity has got quite a lot of publicity out of it. I mean, luckily I've never heard of them, so I don't, but now they're being mentioned all over the place.
Yeah, it's worked.
It has
We're
obviously
talking about
worked.
Them.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
Do they make a gracious acceptance speech? Because if so, I'm glad to say that I didn't see it.
Thankfully, I haven't seen it, if there is one.
I like children so much. I had two children with my first wife and then had another two.
Yeah.
So I've got four. So I guess I don't get any money at all for that.
You're terrible for the environment.
I know, I'm really bad. I'm still trying. I'm trying my best to wreck the earth. I'm driving around a diesel Range Rover. I've got four children. I eat a lot of steak.
Yeah.
I
mean, heating on in the summer.
Heating on in the summer, yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. Well, air conditioning actually is even worse.
Fly around the world as much as we possibly
can. That's unfortunately a bit difficult at the moment.
Well, we'll
get that back soon.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, listen, I'm pleased that we've got a slight variation on Harry and Meghan, because normally we carry them over each week, because normally we have to carry over one particular plank. So I guess that's their mention for the week. So I'll have to think about who we carry over. But give us your first one, Russell.
So my first one is Boris Johnson again.
The Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister.
Did you see his hair today, by the way?
No,
he turned up in the Commons. Well, it's changed colour.
Oh,
you
really?
Know, because it's gone from sort of what it used to be, a kind of straw yellowy type blonde. Mm. Today it was almost white, which tells me that he's clearly colouring his hair.
Or run out of hair dye.
Either and he's that been or colouring it's been, it for it's years been a pretty stressful years. Year.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it looks completely white now. I mean, you know, it still looks, it's a weird cut. It's still looking
maybe
scruffy.
Maybe he's been on a secret holiday, bleached yeah, well, by the sun.
Well, there was that weird story, wasn't there, that people thought he was in Portugal. The story was doing around like last week that he'd gone
theory.
On a secret holiday to Portugal. And it's one of those ridiculous internet rumours. And it's like, well, I think if he was in Portugal, you'd probably find a picture of him somewhere.
Yeah,
but
probably,
nobody ever did.
So my reasoning
so what's his
is,
reason
my reasoning is kind of yet again that Boris, would you believe, goes back on things. He actually
what?
Says things and then doesn't actually follow them through. You know, some people even say he lies. He fibs sometimes, believe it or not. So you'll recall,
I have heard that.
You'll recall not 2 weeks ago, he said on television to The Nation, and I think about 20 million people watched, that when we get to the delayed Freedom Day, July the 19th, of course, because that is 1 month past the original Freedom Day, that it would be irreversible, irrevocable, it would be definite and definitive that all of the measures that have been in place for the last 14 or 15 months, particularly mask wearing, social distancing and so on, in the workplace and on public transport, would all be no more. They'd be eradicated completely. And of course, what we've then seen over the last 24 hours is a procession of ministers running back furiously
yes.
on that, saying, well, actually, let's talk about the mask thing for a
right.
second. Maybe they're not so bad.
And this irreversible word has been coming up again and again.
Whatever
and
happened
hasn't
to
been,
now or never.
Yeah, it hasn't been being used
well,
much lately.
Have been challenged on that.
Yeah.
And they've kind of, as always, obfuscated on that particular question. So now we're back to, well, not only is mask wearing, social distancing and so on kind of de rigueur after the 19th, it's almost being spun as if it is absolutely expected, although it will be guidance. We were talking about this on the way in. You know, what happens on the 20th when you're not wearing a mask
right.
on the train or the tube and you've got every right legally not to do so?
Well, that's
so,
the thing, isn't it?
It will be vilified.
But I suppose with regard to things like public transport, the TfL, as it would be in London, can presumably say to you, we're now putting in a new bylaw.
Well, they could try and make it a condition of carriage.
Yes.
But I'm not sure that that has much legal standing, frankly. And look, I certainly won't be wearing one. You know, I've complied, inverted commas,
yeah.
up till now, but I certainly won't be once the law changes.
Yeah.
Because our Prime Minister said
well,
that
I mean, that's one of the few places I have worn it, but lately what I've been doing is only wear it on the train. Because you know how that used to be the case? And then they started going, oh, you have to wear it as soon as you enter the station. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Mm.
And lately I've also just been going into shops without wearing one because that was the only other place I wore one. And nobody said anything,
yeah.
you know.
And of course, the other thing that was heralded 2 weeks ago was, you know, stop working from home. Get back to the office. You know, let's get things going.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden that, of course, now has changed also. So, you know, don't rush back.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's not just confusing and disappointing. I mean, it's
well, it's going to cause problems, I think, isn't it? Because the sort of the mask zealots, who we all know, are the sort of people that will start having a go.
You
at
can
people.
See the direction of travel
yeah.
that it's going in as well, because now the statistic was something like 9 out of 10 people have antibodies, either because they've been vaccinated or because the young that they're trying to coerce into being vaccinated by threatening to take away our civil liberties, the young have had.
I love that you can still describe yourself as young. Those days have long gone for me.
Yeah, me
when she says we, I'm like, what?
Thanks so much. No, Karen, I'm looping us in on that.
The under 35s
yeah.
Have antibodies because we've had the virus and survived it.
Yeah.
So 9 out of 10 people, regardless of vaccination, have antibodies. And it's quite clear that the link between deaths, hospitalisations and cases going up has been broken
yeah.
to weakened. And so now you see that the direction of the conversation has moved on to long COVID. It's concerns about long COVID
yeah.
in young people and in children
right.
so that they can justify having further restrictions.
Yeah, and all of that long COVID stuff is completely and utterly sort of unprovable, it seems to me. You know, they issue these statements like, well, a million people are suffering from long COVID.
What counts in the definition of long
yeah.
COVID?
Right.
Is it fatigue? Is it having parosmia where your sense of smell
yeah.
is slightly distorted?
And many people will say that they've never got
brain
that back properly,
yeah.
right? And so therefore, presumably, they're part of that statistic.
Someone was joking the other day on Twitter that that you don't get brain fog if you work in the private sector. You would think that possibly the people who are working in the public sector already had a little bit of brain fog.
Yes, it goes along with the bad backs that they all get working in the public sector, where they can't work for months on end.
But is it too much to ask for our Prime Minister to show some leadership? I mean, honestly. You know, I do wonder if there's a bit of kind of Margaret Thatcher's DNA hidden away somewhere that we can kind of use and revitalise.
But you know what it is? Because I was hearing this conversation yesterday after the press conference that he gave, where he's clearly still in the grip of these bloody sage behavioural scientists who say to him, well, if you look a bit too enthusiastic, people will get very carried away.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people already are. I mean, all you've got to do is look at the football the other night and all the people that were jumping up and down in all sorts of different ways, some illegal. There's no social distancing in lots of situations.
Did you notice in the press conference that he made 2 weeks ago when he said we are now unlocking on the 19th, it will be Freedom Day, you could see that he had witty and valance on either shoulder. And when they were called to speak, it was very much a different tone from those guys. As if they'd actually said to him before he walked in, look, you know we don't support this. And I think, look, I actually thought for the first time in many, many, many months, fair play to Boris Johnson for being the kind of...
You know, he's definitely taken a step away from them.
That came out of the Dominic Cummings evidence that he, or lack thereof, but when he was talking to the House of Commons committee, when he said that Boris was actually quite hesitant to enter into another lockdown, that he is aware of the economic consequences. Sajid Javid has been, in the same way, at least recognises that you have to make a cost-benefit analysis and that you have to make a risk assessment. And now, all things considered, they're making... And this is, I think, how they should have approached it from the very beginning, is that you cannot rule a country by science. Mm. You don't lead by science. You have to consider the politics of it.
Because
you have to see society and its health as a whole, not just through one myopic... concern.
No, you can't take the view that because somebody can't do something, nobody else can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be a mad way to run the country.
But it's clear as well that the likes of Witty and Valance and a lot of the scientists that are kind of pro heavy lockdown, and a lot of those that are or trying to keep pushing us into that kind of zero COVID position. By no coincidence whatsoever, are all paid by the public purse.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no difference
to
them whatsoever.
And also many of them, probably all of them, have not missed a day's pay. Mm-hmm.
Or a
pension.
All.
Well, there was a professor on one of the advisory boards, but scientific advisory boards, not SAGE, something else, who said that there were people who had a financial investment in the continuation of things like track and trace. Mm. There are obviously people who are invested in these things, that are vested interest in these things continuing, whilst... everybody else suffers and their business
is closed down. You might say the same thing about the people who want you to keep wearing a mask, because the people that manufacture the masks must be making an absolute fortune. I mean, how many masks did you sell 10 years ago? You know, one. How many did you sell yesterday? 3 million. It's not a bad business.
But isn't it going to be amusing past July the 19th? You're actually going to be able to tell someone's political colours just by looking at them from
you are.
You're going to be so right. So you're on the left because you're wearing a mask.
Yeah.
You're on the right because you're not wearing
Which
a mask.
Which is possibly why people will continue wearing them regardless, because the social pressure to sort of virtue signal that you're one of the people who cares about others.
Yes, and that's their mantra, isn't it? The reason I'm wearing a mask is to be kind to everybody else, because I'm really worried about you.
Yeah.
We're not so worried about you that if you're not wearing a mask, I'm not going to insult you. They'll probably try and punch you. You know, because they're not worried about you then.
Yeah, and I'm not so worried about your job and your livelihood and your business.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is absolutely sickening, isn't it? And the other thing, which brings me on to my first nominee, is the hypocrisy of so many of these people, you know, because Patrick Vallance was there yesterday at the press conference, listening sagely and nodding along when Chris Whitty was talking about, you know, how you should wear a mask in certain situations. And the previous week he was talking about all the situations where he would wear one, including if he was in the company of somebody who felt uncomfortable if he wasn't wearing a mask. And you kind of go... Well, that could be anything. What are you talking about? You know, what if I'm uncomfortable with you wearing one? Would you take it off?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's completely bonkers, isn't it? So Patrick Vallance, right, is nodding along saying if you go into a crowded place, inside or outside, you should wear a mask. In fact, you should avoid a crowded place, really. Next thing you see, he's at Centre Court Wimbledon on Sunday for men's finals day, sitting there around lots of people, around by the, I can't remember if he's in the Royal Box or just next to it, sitting in what would be only described as theatre seating, surrounded by people, in a crowded place, not wearing a mask. I'm not saying you should wear a mask, because I think it would be ridiculous, but you can't tell everybody else
it's
to do something. Sadiq Khan was at Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
Keir Starmer was at Wembley. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could go through the whole list
and
of
no
planks
masks
that are normally on here.
and these are venues that are now at capacity.
And of course, the people who defended it were saying, oh, yeah, but that's a test event. You know, that's okay, because everybody has been tested. Well, they haven't said... if you've been double vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. They've said you still have to wear a mask,
no
matter what.
And if everybody in Wimbledon or in Wembley are double vaccinated or they've tested negative, why are they not at full capacity?
Right.
If it's full capacity, totally safe.
Well, that's the thing. This is the thing that I don't get. They were at full capacity at Wimbledon Centre Court. They sold all the tickets, but they didn't sell all the tickets at Wembley, which is kind of bizarre, isn't it? They sold 60,000, but you can't have another 20,000 or another 10,000 or another 30,000 because somehow that would change everything. And you're kind of going, there's no real logic to any of this.
Yeah, but if you are also an avid mask advocate, people call them that, you know, despite your surroundings, surely you would be wanting to be seen wearing one, even if those around you were not. So, yeah, the blatant hypocrisy.
Well, the curious thing about Wimbledon was that the people who were, like, filming, so, like, BBC cameramen were wearing masks. People who I think were standing as security were wearing masks.
Yeah. It's like the G7 all over again,
but everybody who was
it?
Sitting down, particularly those in the royal box, and Tom Cruise in particular, not wearing a mask of any kind, and presumably not being asked to wear one either.
Well, it's the sort of precedes the two-tier society of the vaccinated being being allowed their civil liberties.
And also, if Wimbledon was in fact a test event, which I didn't know it was, imagine my surprise, because of course it's a very nice posh event which lots of people who have lots of money would like to go to.
But the problem with this whole thing, I mean, the hypocrisy goes right back to, crikey, Stephen Kinnock, do you remember? That was the first kind of active hypocrisy by a member of the kind of the political teriat, if you like. But we're no longer surprised.
Went to see his dad.
Yeah. In a garden for his birthday, but it was still breaking
God
the
forbid.
Law.
Just to remind him of that time that he nearly won the election and then lost it right at the last minute because he had a ridiculous Nuremberg-style rally.
The procession of hypocrisy from people in high places that they're supposed to be leading by example. Mm. I mean, I've literally, haven't you, lost count of the amount
There's
of
an awful
I think
lot
this
of
is, I think this is why people were so angry about what Matt Hancock did.
Yeah,
because everybody knows.
Well, not
that
just his wife then.
And quite. Well, everybody. I think people were obviously not as angry as they should be about the adultery or the morals of the political class. But I think people were so annoyed by it because everyone knows that everybody else is not really keeping the rules. Mm. Everyone knows that everyone is making their own risk assessment and behaving accordingly. Yeah. But what you don't expect is to see the people who are in charge of forcing everybody else to do this, who are responsible for people being dragged through courts or fined or whatever.
And also calling for them. Do you remember, I mean, one of the things that Hancock was criticised for was that he had actually, I think, called for Neil Ferguson to be investigated by the police when he decided to get his leg over that rather nice German model. Well, I mean, you say that rather nice German model, but I mean, it's somebody's personal opinion. Obviously, I can't be saying that. But she was married to somebody else, you know. He wanted him chased down the road by the cops. But, you know, it was all right for him to put his hands on another woman's buttocks. Extraordinary.
Yeah, typical.
Yeah, anyway, so that's Patrick Vallance, and I can assure you he will not be the last hypocrite that I nominate this week. So, Russell, back to you for the second one.
So my second one is the parole board for England and Wales. And I have to say, look, this is not a funny one. I know we like to have fun on this this show, but this ain't funny at all. So this is in relation to Colin Pitchford. Now, the news broke about 2 hours before we shot this, that the parole board have decided that they will let this man out of prison in the next few days and weeks. And this, look, without putting too fine a point on it, this is the man that in the 80s kidnapped, raped and murdered two 15-year-old girls.
Yeah. Three years apart as well.
Yeah, was given 30 years by the judge. Priti Patel and other ministers, of course, have said the right things rather than doing the right things, in my opinion, insofar as saying, yes, we need to try and stop this man being released. And the news broke this morning that the parole board, and this is mystifying to me, the parole board had refused the appeal by the government.
Yeah.
Now, when I grew up and I learnt about politics back in the day and continue to, I thought the government made the rules. I thought the government made laws.
But this is one of those weird ones where they're not supposed to interfere in the judicial process, right?
Well, but there was a review about 3 years ago, a consultation, and I was trying to read it this morning. It's very complex because it talks about the difference between determinate and indeterminate sentences and so on.
Yeah.
But effectively, even though the government could change the law by way of a statutory instrument tomorrow, if they wanted you to stop this monster getting out of prison, he's going to be let out. And I suspect what we'll now see is Priti Patel tomorrow on the morning shows and so on talking about how, you know, she tried vociferously to try and stop this man from being released. Well, it ain't good enough, in my opinion. You know, people like this, despite the fact that he was given a 30-year sentence, which at the time would have been seen to be pretty strong, maybe they thought he'd die in prison. Well, the fact is, he's coming out. Mm. And, you know, imagine a judge back in 1986, 87, making a decision based on when such an abhorrent individual should come out of prison. Well, that was then, you know, and maybe that was okay in society back in the 80s. It certainly, in my book, isn't okay.
It's a good nomination.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Emma, your next
Claudia
one.
Webb, MP.
Yes.
No relation.
No relation. well, she's got an extra E on the end, isn't she, I think?
Yeah,
she
has done another number in a Foreign Affairs committee meeting where she was... asking a question to Dominic Raab about Belarus,
yes,
or as she seemed to be pronouncing it, Beirut.
Beirut.
Asking whether or not the government would take legal action,
yes,
against Beirut.
Beirut.
And Dominic Raab then said to her, well, in, you know, what kind of legal action? He was trying to clarify what her question was. In the first instance, he didn't know what she was talking about because he couldn't understand what she was exactly referring to. And then she said to him, in this sort of cocky way, well, I'm asking you the question.
Right.
It was just horrendously embarrassing.
She's like a sort of parody MP, isn't she? You know how they've got some of them on the Twitter? I sometimes think that she doesn't actually exist.
It's not.
When you see her, you go, oh, my God, really?
She's real.
It's actually not the first time that she's done this in a Foreign Affairs committee meeting.
Right.
So she, it's a few years ago, maybe a year ago, they were discussing Iran.
Mm.
And she suggested that the UK, or insinuated the UK, is as bad as Iran.
Right.
And was asking Dominic Raab for clarification on why it is that we would need to take any action against Iran. And then he obviously goes on to explain, well, it's because they support malicious and terrorist activity, not only domestically but internationally and against UK interests.
Yes. And they would also quite like to get rid of Israel.
She went on to give this spiel about how there is this, and this is how she described it, quaint English phrase of pot calling the kettle black, insinuating that we were in the same way involved in, I guess, similar activity to Iran. But in any case, both of these instances, completely embarrassing.
Well, you do wonder how people like that get elected, don't you? Because if you ran into her on a sort of canvassing trip, or she came and knocked on your door, you'd kind of go, what, really? You're actually standing for the MP seat here?
Calvin Robinson wrote an article on this and how it was that she, because she obviously does keep embarrassing herself and embarrassing her party,
right,
how was it that she got into this position as an MP? And apparently she made her first sort of way into politics because she was on both an all BAME and all women shortlist. And
so only her.
Double whammy.
She's the only one left.
Yeah.
So some people have been making the point that we have low caliber MPs because they're being selected
deliberately.
On the basis of these sort of quotas rather than on the basis of their merit, because there are lots of people who would fit into those categories that you could select on the basis of merit alone.
Yes.
You don't need the categories in order to do so.
I would have thought if you were a woman You would not want to be on an all-woman shortlist.
I would be insulted by that. I would like to know that I was succeeding on my own merit. Exactly. Merit. I would find it really insulting to be placed on an all-women shortlist. Mm. I would refuse to, actually.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, this is, she's obviously a plank for this, but she's a Corbynista.
Yeah.
And she, not too long ago, was involved in a scandal involving declaring her income from a role that she has as a councillor in London.
It's not been a great week for Labour MPs, has it?
She was also messaging people, direct messaging people on Twitter, calling them racists and idiots and sexists and so on.
Right.
So she's had a bad run.
She's one that's going to appear on the show plenty of times.
Do you know, surprisingly, I'm not even sure she's ever been on it. Really? I think this might be the first time.
She'll be on it again.
Well, I'm going to move over to the world of sport for my second.
There
has been quite a lot of sport on, you might have noticed. The football, not least the football. And there's so many ways you could go at this, right? And I thought about many things. I thought about Gareth Southgate. Did he mess it up at the end? Yes, he did. But does that make him a plank? Probably a bit harsh, I would say. But we can argue about that. So I've decided some of the players have said some silly things since the end of the whole debacle on Sunday. But I'm going to make it. It has to really be the rogue football fans, the rogue England fans, who decided it would be a great idea to film themselves doing all sorts of things, including doing sort of handstands naked while having I saw several naked men. There was one who was standing upright and dancing about. There was another one who didn't have much to shout about, by the way, in that particular area. Another guy who was upside down.
Emma said 18 times.
He's still looking for something to look at. This one had a flare stuck where it should not have been stuck and lit. They were publicly snorting cocaine. Now, I saw one guy with a big spoon of coke just doing this, and they're all cheering.
The Italians were putting up pictures on social media of the naked guy next to Michelangelo, David.
Well, that shows a sense of humour, doesn't it? But then they rampaged up Wembley Way. Apparently, it was really dangerous, really horrible, and so quite a serious point, actually. That you know, there were people who took their kids to the game, and the kids were witnessing fights. They smashed their way into Wembley, which is disgraceful in my view. But also, I blame Wembley for not having proper security as well. Mm. They got into the game. They didn't get thrown out. And they ruined it for an awful lot of people. And they've also probably ruined it for England ever getting another tournament. Mm. Because, let's face it, Leicester Square looked like an absolute war zone. Mm. And they did to London what they normally do to places like Marseille or Brazil or wherever they go
for
World Cups.
The fan footage, I mean, like you, I saw lots and lots of it, you know, on social media, on Twitter in particular. And, you know, there wasn't enough kind of grasp of it from a steward point of view at Wembley. But where were the police?
I know.
I didn't see the police anywhere.
Well, I spoke to the guy from Bar Italia, which you probably know, Frith Street, right? Which is an age-old sort of place that people go to watch football, have coffee, have Italian food and stuff. He said that there was a sort of menacing crowd gathering outside who looked like they might be about to start chucking things through windows. They called the police. The police showed up about an hour later. Mm. And said, oh, there's too many of them, we can't do anything.
Well, I was watching the game in central London, and there were police everywhere, but it didn't seem...
Well, they certainly weren't down Wembley Way.
I think it's fair to say, from my walk through London after the game...
That's very brave of you walking through... Were you watching it somewhere?
We were in the Horseshoe.
Oh,
really? Horseshoe Inn,
okay.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And it was brilliant. It did get a bit, towards the end, during the penalties, it got a bit... let's say there was a lot of hubbub. I got knocked off of my stool.
Right.
It wasn't with like malintent. Some guys ripped up a tree and threw it on the floor. I think probably they'd lost a lot of money.
Oh dear.
But generally, you know, walking through, there was a police presence, but the majority of people were just really sad and walking home. As soon as we lost, everyone went silent and just walked out of the pub.
Yeah.
And the trains were not. It was everything was very sort of like polite and pleasant. So
well, there
don't
was
know
a point at
where
which
all
I actually wondered.
Happening.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think a lot of it was in Trafalgar Square, but the Leicester Square stuff was all happening in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, what they should have done was have the game on Saturday at midday rather than on Sunday at 8 o'clock at night. Some pubs were open at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I mean, but it is kind of pathetic that you can't have a football match without people getting so drunk and so disorderly.
But it was the kind of the epitome of what everybody perceives England fans to be like, you know, back from the 80s, the 70s, 80s, 90s,
right.
And it seemed to be that was that was characterised again on Sunday. The other thing, and I'll tread very carefully here because it's been denied, so I'll be very careful, but you'll remember that a certain estate agent was hauled over the coals 3 or 4 weeks ago for tackling Chris Whitty, and he's been fired from his business and so on.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Well, in amongst the alleged racist tweets and social media furor over
wasn't
the last
the
24,
guy,
48 hours.
Was it?
No, but it was alleged to be.
It was alleged to be another estate agent. Wasn't
another
it?
Estate agent from big international estate agency firm. Yeah. Now, to be very clear.
Well,
so
they've denied it, or he has.
Well, he's denied it, said his account was hacked. Okay.
Well,
Benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt.
All right, then.
Yeah, let's not get sued.
Sure.
But this particular, I need to say the name of the firm then. This, it's very public. It's been all over the newspapers and the news. But this particular firm has suspended him. But two estate agents in 3 weeks. So bearing in mind, that's the profession from which I hail.
Yes.
Not a good look for UK property.
No.
Waiting for the headline that estate agents are systemically.
It's not the most popular line of work to begin with, is it?
Even less so now.
I mean, also, that's really one of the worst excuses of all time. If indeed it's true.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, he's got two accounts, and actually they've kind of, they've seen that they actually, the tweets come from two accounts. So it looks like both accounts were hacked.
Yeah, well, strange things happen.
And there was a tweet on March the 9th, and maybe he was hacked then too.
Could be.
Yeah, he's
Could
an unlucky
be.
Guy.
Listen, some people are just unlucky.
Yeah.
But there's also been all sorts of other things around it. There's the case of Tyrone Mings, who got involved this morning, I think, with Priti Patel. Basically, because, I mean, the trouble with all of this is that, like everything now, it's all seen in isolation. It's all seen as black or white. There's no nuance.
I think
you know,
there's something...
So you can't, for example, criticise the team without somehow having a go at the multicultural society in which we live.
Yeah.
Which is nonsense, isn't it?
There's some really slippery reasoning going on with what Tyrone Mings' tweet saying that Priti Patel fanned the flames that has almost as if blaming her for what happened. But plenty of people, I mean, the list just goes on and on, people like David Lammy, Billy Bragg, attacking people who, like Priti Patel, who either criticised taking the knee or said that that people should be allowed to boo taking the knee, which they should be allowed to express themselves. If the players are allowed to express themselves, the fans should be allowed to express themselves.
But this is
themselves.
It got to the point where you're not now allowed to boo somebody's national anthem. But I mean, I'm not particularly in favour of that, but you should be allowed to do it.
The reason, though, why I think that this is... It's not no laughing matter the turn that this has taken in terms of the reasoning is because the reason why people like Priti Patel and others criticise taking the knee is because taking the knee was being booed because of its inextricable association with Black Lives Matter.
Right.
You can argue whether or not the players themselves think that they're kneeling in homage to Black Lives Matter or in homage to something else.
Well, they've said quite clearly that they're not doing it in homage to Black Lives Matter, but that doesn't mean
so divisive. Like the stats, 55% of people thought that Black Lives Matter had made racial relations in this country worse.
Yeah.
It's an organisation that wants people to see colour. It thinks it can solve racism by asking people not to be colourblind. So the point
and
is
race relations haven't been helped by the appearance of Black Lives Matter.
Not at all. And
in any way.
It's become even more divisive as a consequence of this agenda being pushed.
Yeah,
that's exactly the point. So if you're criticising taking knee because you think that it's a divisive act, that is not incompatible with saying that you condemn racism.
No.
I mean, when, and this almost went unnoticed, but when Millwall linked arms and held up a banner that said inequality with the crossed out recently, the fans cheered rather than booed.
Yeah.
It's not because they're like racist troglodytes that they're booing, it's because of the association. And so I think it's really disingenuous of all of these people to attack people who had who would criticise taking the knee to suggest that they shouldn't have done that because clearly racism is a problem. They're completely missing the point.
Yes, and also, you could also argue, could you not, that this taking of the knee has not exactly solved the problem of racism. You could equally
clearly
argue that the people who send these tweets are idiots and not worth taking too much notice of.
All of the talk of microaggressions and so on, ignoring the fact that there is still actual real racism, as we've seen. And actually, not just against the players, but also against public figures who have been critical, people like Calvin Robinson or Priti Patel, Kemi Badenoch, ethnic minority public figures who are constantly
who are
being attacked with
it.
The most horrendous racial abuse.
But here's an example that I saw this morning, which is Natalie Elphick MP, who criticised Marcus Rashford for being too political and saying perhaps if he focused more on football and less on politics he might be a better penalty kicker and he might have scored the goal.
Right.
Now I think that's absolutely fair comment.
Yeah.
Now that had nothing to do with Marcus Rashford's race.
I mean, you can see how other people would not see it that
way. But that's the point. sense. So if we didn't have this kind of accentuated racial debate, then Natalie Elphick perhaps would have felt better disposed to make that comment. Do you know what she's done in the last couple of hours?
No.
Withdrawn the comment and apologised.
Well,
so it had nothing to do with race.
She was probably under pressure to do that.
Yeah, but the point being, she now doesn't feel that she can even say something as benign as that without having to apologise.
But also, that's about football, isn't it? It's not racist, just because you're saying it about somebody who happens to be black.
But the reaction as well, there's no perspective in it. We were just talking about the rugby player who said what he was saying
he
about Aaron Ryan. I'm not going to repeat it.
He used to be quite a sensible guy until Brexit happened. And then he became this kind of Remainer, sort of crazed Remainer type person, a sort of rugby version of Gary Lineker, poor man's Gary Lineker. And he's really quite nasty on Twitter now, which is a shame. Nice to know him. He used to be quite, you know, I used to get on with him very well. He used to do a show at Talk Sport. He used to be on Breakfast every now and
again. It seems bizarre to me that people think that that approach, that sorts of things that they're saying is the way to unite. Because actually, and this was a point that has been made by others, the headlines have all been about how racist, how racist the English are. When in fact, actually, everybody's come out in support. During the match, when Saka and Rashford came on, the people in the pub were singing songs about them because they are heroes.
Yeah, look at Sterling. Everyone loves Sterling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the people that got stuck into the players themselves really didn't do themselves any favours. Danny Baker did it because he was obviously, up late and got himself into trouble again on Twitter.
Yeah.
Not this time about the royal baby. Mm. But he just basically started effing and blinding and saying Southgate was useless. And why was he still being given all these kind of plaudits and all of that? And whatever you may think.
Because of the penalty picks.
Not just of the way the team played. And I mean, it wasn't their finest game because Southgate did get it wrong. He did get the tactics wrong. He should have had the second half far more attacking style. He should have tried to score more goals instead of trying to sit back. Picked the wrong players for the penalties, got all of that wrong. And I think he will in time, admit that. But the trouble is, there are people who seem to think that because St. Gareth has kind of created this amazing young team,
you can't criticise it.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Because as we all know, if you're not challenged, then things don't improve. I mean, look, it's, again, probably won't be a popular thing to say, but bringing Saka on to take a penalty, the guy's never taken a penalty in a tournament in his life.
He's never taken a penalty in any senior football job.
And there was
he's only ever taken two
Grealish,
penalties.
Shaw and others sitting there. Grealish, of course, famously over the last 24 hours has said, I wouldn't take a penalty.
Right.
And I did say I would.
Right.
But, Saka's put forward at the tender age of 19 with no penalty experience. People have a right to question that, surely,
of course,
don't they?
But the other weird thing, and people have been pointing this out as well, is that a lot of these racist tweets came from foreign lands. Now, there's two theories about that. Either you believe that people in Saudi Arabia, India, the UAE and Iran take a great interest in racial profiling of English footballers and send them horrible tweets. Or lots of people have got VPNs which suggest that they're in different countries.
Or bots.
Or they're... Yeah, but, I just think that,
An attempt to sow division.
I think there are two things here. I think it's important that we don't take the racist tweets out of proportion because they are idiots. They're not to be taken seriously. And many of them, I would bet you, are kids who just aren't really racist. They're just idiots, and they just want to try and insult them.
Yeah.
And so they're using words that they think will be insulting. I'm more worried, in a way, about the thug element, who are actually beating people up, because there were, again, footage of Italian fans just being set upon by these drunken thugs, sort of 10 to 1, And that's disgraceful behaviour. I'm not saying that, racially abusing somebody isn't bad, but beating somebody up for no reason
but
at all.
There's no way that you solve all of these people who are coming out attacking people who criticise taking the knee for being divisive. They extend no latitude to those people with that opinion, because people who are making that argument are making that argument from the perspective of, yes, we all agree that racism is bad, but we don't think this is the way to deal with it. And there are players who have themselves said this isn't the way to deal.
But it's such a lazy argument,
isn't
it? Just to say that because, because you don't agree with the political diversification of that gesture, you must be racist.
Yes.
How pathetic.
Mm-hmm. I know.
How pathetic.
Well, let's hope it all moves on through the summer, and by the time the new season starts, it will be in a different place. We shall see.
Yeah.
So, time for your number three.
So my third is Sadiq Khan.
Ah, very good.
Who I seem to nominate every single time.
Back to the old, and so you should, Emma.
The
so
old
you favourites. Should.
He's already got a mention, wasn't he? Because he was at the final without a mask, despite all
we'll
of his protestations.
We'll add that to the list of reasons why he's nominated
probably
this week.
Probably turn up in his gas-guzzling Range Rover too, probably. Rather than his favoured puppet.
And it's not just any old gas-guzzling Range Rover, it's the £150,000 version, because it's had to have all the bells and whistles added to it. Yeah. And I think it might even be armour-plated or something.
But this is the guy that said we should get out of our cars and get onto public transport. Well, if he hadn't bankrupted it, maybe more of us would.
Well, I mean, you'd like to get out of your car, but unfortunately you can't move because
sure
you're surrounded by cyclists and people
himself.
On e-scooters, and if you open the door, you're going to kill somebody.
If he tried to use the public transport, he might discover that it never works and you always have to pay the same amount to use to travel, even regardless.
And have you heard the latest news on the public transport front? And this is, with apologies to anyone who doesn't live in London, they're going to shut the Northern Line for 4 months, apparently, which includes the station that we are at here. So if anyone travels in from North London or South London even, you won't be able to get to London Bridge. On the Northern Line.
Well, it seems as if the District Line's been shut for years.
Well, that's the worst line
so
in the
frequently.
World. I mean, I think you'd get better luck if you went to some bloody country in Papua New Guinea, and the train service probably runs better there.
But it's a bit like COVID regs, isn't it? Probably the people that are making these decisions on closing lines and disruption and so on don't actually use that service themselves.
Didn't they also shut the Bakerloo line early after the match?
I don't know. Well,
I can't remember if I'm not sure
I don't
if that's
know.
100%.
Sure. But I know a lot of people couldn't leave the stadium because it was too rowdy outside, and people were, in fact, I was hearing that Gareth Southgate's own parents who were there were kept in until about midnight because it was thought not to be safe for them to travel outside of the stadium. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Madness.
Yeah.
So the reason why I'm nominating Sadiq Khan this week is not because of his appearance at Wembley, but because of the fourth plinth and his praise of the pieces of art that have been nominated.
This is for people who don't know, in Trafalgar Square, where they've got
so they have
of
this
statuary.
The fourth plinth always has cycling artworks on it. So people will vote. They have, different pieces of art will be put up for a certain period of time.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant actual cycling statuary.
No, maybe at some point.
Because
I might have had to go and tear it down, make my own statue protest.
So the fourth plinth statue has been given to this statue of, I'm going to have to read the name because I don't want to pronounce it wrong, a Baptist preacher called John Chilimbwe. I'm sorry if I'm not saying that correctly. He was a pan-Arabist, anti-colonialist agitator, I guess you would call him. And so this statue is a very large statue of him next to a much smaller life-size, apparently, statue of another Baptist preacher, white Baptist preacher. And he's wearing a hat, which is apparently supposed to be subversive because apparently black people weren't allowed to wear hats in front of white people at that time. But the reason why I'm nominating Sadiq Khan is because this statue, the Baptist preacher, it was reported this week, apparently, historically, this guy incited a mob of people to go to a plantation owner's house, gave them orders to kill all European men, went to this plantation owner's house, decapitated him with an axe in front of his wife and children in his bedroom, and then proceeded to preach a sermon with the head on a spike next to him.
Sounds like a lovely guy.
Mm. Sadiq, and the other statue that has been nominated alongside this that will also go on display is a statue of 180 masks that were cast of trans people's faces in this sort of cube-like setup.
Right.
And Sadiq Khan has said, I've got the quote here, that these artworks are shining an important spotlight on important issues our societies face. So Sadiq Khan has been Sadiq Khan has really been criticised.
You can't make this stuff up.
He's been criticised because this guy, obviously, we've had discussions around Colston and other statues, or Churchill.
You and I, when this goes up, we need to march to Trafalgar Square with our tools. We need to take it down and drag the thing into the Thames.
Put it in the Thames. And then you won't be done for it, of course. The police will just stand by watching.
I think I might be accused for inconsistency there, given my love of statues.
Yeah.
But the reason why I'm nominating him and the reason why he's been criticised for this is because, as it has been sort of written about this week, this Baptist preacher has a pretty unambiguous history of...
sounds pretty violent.
Pretty gruesome activity.
But we're still celebrating him.
Well, quite. And yes. I think the point is that, regardless of what you think of the statue or the meaning of the statue or it being put up, is the fact that Sadiq Khan, obviously, as the hypocrite that you've described him as, he is not exactly consistent when it comes to criticising or praising statues on the basis of their.
And he's still got the old statue commission going, hasn't he? Filled with all these lefties who are going to decide whether they should tear loads down.
The saving grace, of course, is that he can't stand to be London mayor again. That's it. He's got three years, 4 years.
I can't stand for him to be London mayor now. Never mind him.
Unfortunately, he's done a Tony Blair when Tony Blair set up all of those quangos so that he could sort of almost rule without being there. He set up things like this commission. And
I reckon
it's quite worrying that if Sadiq Khan thinks that this sort of statue is what he wants the public space in London to represent, when he talks about in this commission needing the public space to represent London's values, that he thinks that this guy is the sort of statue that we should have up, I think that says something about Sadiq Khan's vision for London.
I'm amazed that the statue isn't a bus driver, aren't you? Because he never mentions bus drivers.
Hardly ever. I think he quite fancies his chances of running for Labour leader as well, once Keir Starmer disappears off.
The thing is, if they wanted to put up a statue in relation to all the stuff that's been going on recently, they wanted to pick an anti-colonialist figure or an anti-slavery figure, why did they go for this guy and not someone like Frederick Douglass? Somebody who you can really
somebody who didn't preach next
to her head on a spike.
Yeah, I mean, there must be quite a few people who didn't actually do
that. I can imagine there are a lot to select from.
You know, certainly, can you put one up for somebody who hasn't beheaded?
Yeah, there's probably a list somewhere, isn't
any
there?
Any chance of that? Maybe not. Your number three, Russell?
Yes, so talking of reprehensible individuals, my third is Emmanuel Macron.
Oh, yes.
And I know that he's a popular choice on this show.
He is.
But my reasoning is that, and again, it shouldn't be a surprise, really, that he's now announced a two-tier society in France, which is about to grace their society, on the basis that if you are not vaccinated fully, not double vaccinated, effectively you will have no access almost to anything whatsoever. So cafes, restaurants, libraries, events, cinemas, theatres and so on will all require a vaccination. Mm. And if that was not sinister enough in terms of a two-tier society, a kind of almost an apartheid, a vaccine apartheid, when asked apparently if this means that vaccination will become compulsory in France, which is even more sinister, his response was not yet.
Really?
What do we think about that?
Well, I mean, Macron is facing an election, isn't he, next year, which could end up with him being kicked out of office. So if he's not going to do it soon, he's going to miss out, I think, by the sounds of it. Also, isn't there a case where he's been arguing about the vaccines not being very good?
Wasn't he
doing that? It was just hours, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, but was he not part of that AstraZeneca raid on the factory?
Are they using AstraZeneca now?
But I think both he and Merkel were quite disparaging of it for use in people over 65 or under 65. I can't remember what it was. But also, the French don't like vaccines very much, do they? So there's a lot of them who haven't been vaccinated.
Well, I think this is why he's saying it. So he's basically saying you can have your freedom, but it's at a big price.
Yeah. That's a dangerous game to play with the French, isn't it? Because, I mean, they love a punch-up, don't they? The old Gilets Jaunes will be out in air force.
The Bastille.
Burning all sorts of stuff.
The same sinister reasoning we saw coming from a source in Downing Street was reported this week. That a Downing Street source apparently said that that essentially restricting people's civil liberties could be a useful tool for, in the same way they described it as a useful tool.
Useful.
Essentially, with young, and it was quite clear that this whole thing around vaccine passports is intended. The reason behind it is to try and encourage the young. And I say encourage, I mean coerce. Mm. Coerce the young into having a particular medical intervention.
Yeah.
And saying, really hanging the threat over everyone's heads that if you don't do this, you will be excluded from society.
And you can imagine similar conversations going on in, 1917, 18 in Moscow and 1936 in the Reichstag, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't even talk about it, they just do it.
There's a much deeper point in here about your medical privacy, because in this instance it's possibly showing your NHS app and proving that you've had a particular jab. But what about the confidentiality of all of your medical records?
Yeah, right.
Do people feel comfortable with the precedent that this sets? Because I think if people started thinking about it in terms of their own medical confidentiality, they might realise that in addition to the civil liberties point, this is just a very sinister development. And it's a red line that no government should ever, ever cross.
No, exactly. And also the fact that it's all online now, and the fact that there's an app that you can somehow sort of flash under a little light outside a pub. Yeah. I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
It's a vaccine passport by the back door.
Yeah, you're basically going... everything's on here, you can just suck right out of my phone and show it to your mate behind the bar.
Yeah.
Or look, this bloke's had syphilis.
No, but employers...
Or something similar.
Employers will pay to download this stuff, won't they? And they will make employment decisions based on your medical history.
Yeah.
Absolutely outrageous.
Well, that's the next thing. And also health insurance will start to kick in. They'll go, sorry, you've got a pre-existing condition. Well, how do you know that? Because you just showed me all your medical records. Yeah. And therefore, we won't insure you not only to go on holiday, but we won't give you life insurance either. Mm. I mean, it is a very slippery slope.
Yep. And we're on it. And we are on it.
We are on it. Mm. So, it's down to me, I think, isn't it? Mm. Final Your number third. Three is Humza Yousaf, a man who's been on the plank list once or twice before. He is, of course, the Health Secretary in Scotland. Very unpopular man with anyone who's trying to get a business running, because he's actually even worse than Matt Hancock ever was. Far more draconian, far more cautious. I mean, in Scotland, I think today they're still saying, we're not going to get rid of masks for the foreseeable future. You're not going to be able to walk around without a mask on. We're going to make you keep wearing them. These are the same people, by the way, who banned music when they finally opened the pubs where you could go in and not have a drink. You could only go in to have a meal.
A soft drink or something.
You could have a soft drink and some food, but you couldn't actually have an alcoholic drink.
What happened to the Scots?
I know. I mean...
It's rather the antithesis of the Scots, isn't it?
So then they said you can't actually play music. You cannot even through, you know, like a playlist from Spotify. You can't play any music at all because people might be tempted to sing. And, of course, that, as we know, spreads COVID more than anything else. And he's a complete and utter plank, this guy. And he's, of course, loving it, right? As all you know, politicians do. But the SNP are particularly good at making everybody's life a misery. However, once again, we have found his hypocrisy, because it turns out that at the end of the school term, which was, I think, a couple of weeks ago in Scotland, he and some members of his family, it doesn't say exactly who, decided to visit England, the place where they apparently say all the COVID has come from. These are the same people who made it impossible for people to go to Manchester, same people who said you mustn't travel outside of Scotland, basically said they didn't want anybody from England
going into Scotland. Why on earth would he want to come to England?
Well, he wanted to take his young relative, apparently, to the Harry Potter Warner Brothers studio, because that's down, I think, not far from Elstree.
Off the M25
somewhere. But he did it at a time when Scotland became the actual flashpoint and the highest rate of COVID in Europe.
So he was the danger.
So, I mean, one, he shouldn't have been travelling, because he was probably advising everybody else not to travel.
Yeah.
Two, he's the Secretary of State for Health in Scotland, so you think he might want to be there to try and sort out why the COVID is actually raging so high and why Scotland is actually now worse than England in terms of numbers of deaths, in terms of numbers of infections and all of that. But he just basically said, no, to hell with that. I'm going to take my relatives on a very nice trip away because I deserve it. So we need to get it down to 3 from 9. So, Emma, why don't you pick your favourite one of Russell's?
Shall I recap?
Yes, please.
So Boris Johnson, the parole board for England and Wales, and Emmanuel Macron.
Macron.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. Ooh.
I'm very angry about the vaccine passport. So.
Very controversial, that. Excellent. Very good. Right, so my 3, Patrick Vallance. Mm-hmm. What's his? The Rogue England fans and Humza Yousaf.
I think Rogue England fans.
They sort of have to be in there, don't they?
I think so.
All right. So now, Emma, I'm going to pick yours then.
Claudia Webb, Population Matters,
yes.
Or Sadiq Khan?
Ooh, that's quite difficult, actually.
Mm. Mm. Sadiq is an old favourite. I mean, he does pop up every week. Deservedly so.
Yeah,
but
I
maybe
think Claudia Webb deserves a sort of top 3 finish.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think she's
going to.
Well,
that won't
be her
last appearance, as we said, I suspect.
Well, I think you're probably right. Yeah, let's do that then. So that means that we have Claudia Webb, we have England, Rogue England fans, and Emmanuel Macron.
Mm. I know which one I want to go for. Rogue England fans. I think they're the worthy, big inverted commas, winner.
I think I would say that they were. You're going to go and want Macron, aren't you? She hates him so much.
Clearly.
She's sure not some kind of francophobic. I'm not sure if that's a word.
I'm a francophile. That's why I don't like him.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, good point.
I don't like the fact he's destroying France.
No.
Though he's been very good on statues and blasphemy.
He has been very good on that, actually. Yeah.
But maybe Macron's
a
worthy
second. Got
to give him
credit where credit is due. He was good on blasphemy and statues, so... Maybe
it's a great legacy, isn't it?
He
was good on
blasphemy
of statues.
No good at anything else.
I mean, I wonder how you would describe Boris Johnson. He's good at decorating and getting married.
Yeah, good at reproduction.
Yes. Got a reproduction sofa. It's not what you think it is. So, I think England fans get it, don't they?
I think so.
I'm going to be outvoted.
I'll give you Macron number two, and that means number three, Claudia Webb, which I think is a pretty good day's work.
She's escaped.
She makes it. She'll make it into the top half of the top 100 for planks of the year, but I'm afraid Harry and Meghan are still up there running it.
Well, they're bound to be, aren't they? Yes. It's almost as if their very existence is just to ensure that they get on this show.
Yes, it almost is, because it's their only relevance at this point. Right,
we should do a PR deal with them.
I know. Well, they probably want us to pay them, though, rather than the other way around. So here it is, this fabulous new plank of the week, which has got my name on it, and it's got all of the right words on it as well. We're going to give it to the rogue England fans that ruined the night on Sunday for so many families, for so many kids, and who destroyed parts of London. You should be ashamed of yourselves. You are the plank of the week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.